And now CBC Playhouse presents The Sinking of the Northwest Passage, a play for radio by J. Michael Yates.
So many of us were born with no Northwest Passage to discover.
We spend our lives carrying that poignant absence.
Inside us.
Wherever we go.
Around and around the earth.
Eric F. Fuller, Commodore!
Commodore Eric F. F. Fuller stands in the bow of his sailing ship, the Northwest Passage, near the bowsprit.
His configuration is most personal, most abstract.
Arms folded over his still large caliber chest.
I am Commodore because I say so. Let any man who doubts come forward and say.
And what would the as if say?
In what navy do you serve, sir?
None. Such institutions are for ordinary men.
Such titles as Commodore are earned with valor and conferred in formal and elaborate ceremony.
Ordinary, ordinary.
Nevertheless.
Nevertheless, unto the last, the golden coin nailed to the mast, vanitas vanitatum, the sum of worth, beginning in death, ending in birth, the Commodore commandeers the spaces of the earth. Nevertheless,
hell and nuts. Didn't great Caesar place the laurel on his own brow? And what of Tamburlaine? These were great men in history. I am outside of and greater than all history.
Who says so?
I say so, you imbecile. You doubt it?
In a lifespan, few voyages are begun by a man. Even fewer end. No voyages at all occur to most men. All flags should fly at half-mast.
Frankly, yes.
Frankly, you are a quadrilateral, incandescent, ordinary, gregarious afterbirth of a self-conscious bitch monkey. Why do I waste time talking to you? Name me one among all past and present commodores. Name me one who ever built his navy with his own hands as I have.
I cannot.
Of course you can't. I am my own navy, and as of it, it is fitting and proper that I function as its commodore.
Do you suppose your garb is befitting an officer of your station? Common overalls?
I am wearing a Yukon tuxedo. I am at full dress at all times. On high ceremonial occasions, I add a black bow tie.
Why all the shouting? There's no one around.
You'd be surprised, my dear, how many there are around us.
How are the supports?
Excellent sailing this morning. Not a ripple in the asphalt. But I could wish for more wind, you know.
At least it isn't a submarine.
I concealed the torpedo tubes so cleverly that even you can't see them. At will, I can dive and rig for silent running.
I was fearful that all that weight could damage the asphalt driveway. You know what an expense it was, getting them to pave our driveway up here on top of the mountain. Oh, don't do that. Someone might see.
But you just assured me there's no one about.
Never mind.
Come aboard. Come aboard. Don't just stand there on the surface. Well, can't you see I'm underway? Look at that view of Mount Four. You can see 400 miles.
Yes, it's beautiful. Every day it's the same, but not the same.
Light. Because of the light, things never look the same on successive days. This vessel contains all my time, all my light. Every day the light is changing. Oh, wait till you see it. Wait till you see the light upon the mountain up close. We're going to sail right to it, then right up to its summit before we turn north again into the Northwest Passage.
There's no water straight to the mountain.
Never mind that. We don't need water so long as there is light. I'll come into the cabin. I'll show you what I entered in the log before you arose. Here, listen carefully. The first corporeal form is, in my opinion, light. For light of its very nature diffuses itself in every direction in such a way that a point of light will produce instantaneously a sphere of light of any size whatsoever, unless some opaque object stands in the way. Now, the extension of matter in three dimensions is a necessary concomitant of corporeity And this despite the fact that both corporeity and matter are in themselves simple substances lacking all dimension. But a form that is in itself simple and without dimension could not introduce dimension in every direction into matter, which is likewise simple and without dimension, except by multiplying itself and diffusing itself instantaneously in every direction and thus extending matter in its own diffusion. Are you following me?
Have I ever failed to follow you?
Now, just listen to this. I can't get to light, yet I can't get away from it. This vessel we stand upon is not light, but perhaps it is a color of light broken upon a prism. Do you understand?
I suppose so.
The Northwest Passage is all directions and none of the known ones. And whatever performs this operation is either light or some other agent that acts in virtue of its participation in light to which this operation belongs essentially. And I, madam, am that agent.
And you know there's no longer a Northwest Passage to be found.
Ordinary poppycock. Well, you can come with me, or I'll set you ashore on an island and proceed alone.
Oh.
Or leave you here on the mountaintop. Or whatever you prefer.
Oh, thank you. We'll think about it again after breakfast. Come on in now.
All right, I'll just anchor up now. I won't be a minute.
The sad, sinking anchors.
Throw and throw overboard.
To halt the ineluctable motion.
To staunch the flow.
The hemorrhage.
Time streams out of us.
Away from us like the last water.
From the last broken vessel.
In the desert. We have inhabited always.
That's your third mug of sourdough wet breakfast.
4 fingers of overproof rum, honey, cinnamon, lemon juice, and strong black tea. Never mixed in that order. This is one of the best houses I ever built. It voyages well. Hardly keels on the wind.
Yes.
But it won't get through the passage. The passage is quite narrow, you know.
No, I didn't know.
Perhaps if we're asleep. Both fast asleep.
How do you know if it's never yet been discovered?
I know these things. It's my affair to know these things.
I cannot feel forward to the voyage with the hands of my mind.
Voyage?
I'm not sure there's the thing voyage in me.
It's in you or you're not alive.
That possibility has occurred to me.
No, it's in us, to be sure. Woman, voyage is interregnum. The interval between notes and music, the darkness which divides the light, the sleep between two awarenesses, the interstice between departure and arrival. Space is time. Here we're bound by our coordinates. When we sail away and come into sight of land, space delivers us into the hand of time again. But between, in motion, there is no time, no space, only possibility.
Possibly.
We'll have just the right tide, woman, just the right tide. It may be necessary to wait days, or even months for just the right tide. And even then, it'll be handy to have pike poles starboard and port to push us off if she goes off too close to the sides. But at the right tide, at just the right tide, with the big rollers behind us, we should surf right on through.
I hope so.
Probably we won't even need any canvas, much less the engine. No engine is really dependable anyway. Trust the natural stuff, wind and water.
If you say so.
I do, truly.
It's a blinding summer morning. Light tentacles reaching in through the windows and curling about the legs of the handmade furniture. Brilliant, as only mornings in the long-lit northern summers can be.
What is it?
Nothing I can see. Ship's riding easily at anchor.
What a strange noise.
Yes.
The eldritch noises to which we can attach no event. As if something arrived and turned again and went before we authenticate anything with another sense. A thing without a name has leapt the tall fence of awareness and vanished like a wild animal making off with domestic prey. A hole in the morning is widening across the day.
Is it coming from the boat?
She can't be breaking up.
Could she be breaking up?
I built her.
Your hands have touched every centimeter.
I built her.
Silly of me.
Extremely.
I suppose.
Possibly.
Probably.
Perhaps.
You'd better go out and have a look.
I think I'll just give you a hand with these dishes first.
Go!
He first withdraws his pocket watch from the upper left-hand pocket of his overalls and glances at the time, replaces it, gazes slowly around the kitchen and through the window, which frames a magnificent view of Mount Forer, then finally pushes out the screen door and strides slowly across the asphalt driveway.
She watches from the door, and the house slowly fills with her ineffable dread. She sees nothing unusual, only the driveway with the boat on its supports filling it, and Commodore Eric F. F. Horror nearing the provenience of the sound of breaking.
What do you see? Can you see anything?
The ship looks fine. Just fine.
The supports?
Asinine. Those supports would handle twice the weight of this vessel.
Are you sure it isn't too heavy for them? Are they breaking?
No, damn it. No, I say.
Then what is it?
Here.
What?
Cross members.
Breaking? They must be breaking. The sound.
No.
Then what?
Sinking. Sinking.
But the sound.
Just the struts working. The supports. The bloody supports sinking through the pavement. Funny. They've been here in this same position for such a long time. Such a long time. All these years, same weight, same conditions. Why would things wait until this moment to begin sinking?
Let me see. I don't know. Maybe it's the heat.
Can't be. It's not hot out.
You're right, I suppose. It's been much hotter than this on other days, and it had no effect. Don't you remember that terrible summer about 19 years ago? Forest fires everywhere, the almost insufferable heat, and no breeze at all? If ever the supports were going to sink through the asphalt, they would have done so then.
Well, it's right in front of your eyes, woman. Sinking. Well, there, look!
Time of ice, time of fire. The man is damned who lives to see the swamps of a life solidify, and all his substantial traces go to mire.
The back cross member vanishes, and the stern of the vessel settles to the ground. It gives the whole vehicle a strange lurching look, as if climbing a great swell on the high sea. The lines of the craft had become so familiar to them in the foreground of the landscape, and now the deck was almost at a 30-degree angle with the horizon.
When even the most familiar things come foreign to the eye, there seem at least two choices. A gathering of one's most guarded safeties, or to chart a course toward dead center of the everlasting way.
Look under here. The keel's more than halfway submerged.
Yes.
Blast the blasted luck.
What now?
Quick! Help me put these planks over there under the hull. We've got to keep her from keeling over. It'll smash the ribbing and ruin everything. I'll never find yellow cedar of that quality again. They don't even replant yellow cedar after they lug it. There. Those 4x4 should steady her.
Oh, where are you going?
To get Jack's. Jack her up. Build another platform under the stern.
How did this happen?
Woman, seamanship is a tricky science and a difficult art. There are strange currents, woman. Strange currents which sink great ships even in the fairest of surface conditions. Tides change. Sea floors and continents are restless, always on the move. Our senses are simply too blunt to register these constant rearrangements. A man can never know too much about navigation.
Oh, dear, now the bow is down.
I have eyes! I have eyes!
Will the planks keep it afloat?
Who can be certain of such things? No sense in trying the jacks now. There's nothing forward or astern scoop enough to take leverage under that weight. I have no intention of cracking ribs and breaking off her railings to get purchase. Better the Northwest Passage go down as I made her than go down scarred and maimed.
But wouldn't it be better to compromise and save even...
No!
Can't you do something?
Possible! I could tunnel in two places beneath the ship. Run belts under. Hire a crane to yard her up while I build new supports under her.
Yes, do that. It's important that you try everything. But you'd have to ruin the driveway, wouldn't you?
Yes.
I'll go phone for the crane.
Rage against the inexorable. All things are sinking. All are empty vessels taking into their hold the dangerous ballast of time. Once begun, overload takes the helm. Each ship we build goes forth against the flow. Each one afloat until all space fills with time. Each one overwhelmed.
By the chairs!
We'll sit and keep a close watch. She's sailing high and easy now on the planks. Maybe something will occur to us.
Did you call about the crane?
Yes.
What did they say?
Either there is no elevation company listed in the yellow pages, or there is no crane this far north large enough for the job. Or it would require two smaller cranes. And likely the two operators couldn't coordinate their lifting.
Suppose a bee flew into the cab of one of them at a crucial moment. Everyone knows the two machines cannot be perfectly harmonized, even by a third machine. There are too many variables. If one failed, not only would all that effort be in vain,
but much money would go for nothing. All our money is riding on the planks before us there. This is the building season. All things and all men are under contract. In fact, they wouldn't be allowed to come up here by road at all. The tracks would scar the pavement. There are ordinances against flanges. They would have to bring the cranes on low beds, and it would be necessary to add the cost of the trucks and their drivers. If they came on trucks, there would be far too much weight per axle for the myriad small bridges between the city and this driveway. There are ordinances, always ordinances, to protect the forms of civilization. These people aren't fond, you know, of small and extraordinary jobs like this one and avoid them at almost all costs. Or the line was busy, or out of order, or they wouldn't believe me.
I'd forgotten.
Why do women forget such things?
I'm not women. I'm singular, and I don't know why I forget such things.
Sit down.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I'm sorry, too. Can you use the ship's radio for help?
No. Too many domes and ridges for sending signals from here. No charts for this extremity of north. No one sails here.
How about sending up a flare?
Too dry. Forest fire hazard is too high. I won't risk burning the ship. All of my life is in her seams.
They sit, she hugging herself against a slight chill. He with his left arm across the back of her chair, and both gazing at the soft line where the keel touches the pavement.
Possibly it was only the night air. It might somehow have weakened the supports.
There was nothing wrong with the supports. They sank without giving way.
Oh, that's right. But it's not sinking now.
I'm afraid you're wrong. Since the forward support disappeared, it's been sinking steadily.
I can't hear it.
I can. Believe me, I can.
And it doesn't look like it to me.
Look closely. Don't you see how the planks we set beneath are gradually floating out beyond the sides?
Yes. Yes, I think I see now. But why do we hear nothing?
Not all sinking is sensory. Sometimes it goes on through the nights and days without our noticing at all. By the time we've grown cognizant of it, there's no bilge pump strong enough to save us. Probably the Northwest Passage began to sink the instant I touched pencil to paper to design her.
Do you think so?
Yes.
And knowing this, it made no difference?
No.
I think I wouldn't have gone through with it if such a suspicion occurred to me.
I could have preferred things otherwise. But without boats to build, there wouldn't be anything. Soon she'll hit the waterline.
Yes.
Then, who knows?
Say, I just thought of something. Maybe the Northwest Passage simply has a mind of her own and is trying to tell us something by launching herself. She'll stop at the waterline. I think I'll go inside for a bottle of champagne to christen her just in case.
The mast stands like a sundial, wavering only slightly in the spare breeze of the almost imperceptible silent settlings below.
So much for my waterline.
What are you doing up there? Why draw the ladder behind you? What do you expect to accomplish?
Weighing anchor!
He pulls the bill of his sailing cap low against the vanishing rays of the strange northern sun, pauses to check this fitting, then that, gives a turnbuckle a couple of twists, then goes inside to his compass, charts, and wheel.
Don't you think you ought to come down?
His head appears around the frame of the cabin door. He glares at her with fraudulent anger.
I mean, you never know what might happen.
You never know.
He unlashes the mainsail.
Pulls it determinedly up the mast.
Secures the boom.
Returns to the wheelhouse.
Emerges again quickly.
Leaps to the bow.
Cups his hand to his mouth.
In the name of Boreas and all inspiration, more goddamn wind!
Listen. Here's in the distant trees, like a locomotive nearing.
There's always breeze in the late afternoon and evening.
Never mind. Where's my line now?
About midway between gunwale and waterline, I guess. The jib
stiffens into the shape of the blade of a knife being held aloft.
Below on the driveway, she paces round and round the craft, hugging herself against the sharpening wind.
Not the spinnaker! No!
The mainsail full, the Commodore, struggling against winds mounting to gale force, manages to get the deep green spinnaker up. It balloons and burgeons like the throat sac of a monster frog.
She stands in the lee of the vessel.
But not too close.
It pitches now, side to side, forward and aft, as if in a typhoon.
Anything might have happened.
Sails might have split.
The boat might have broken up.
It might even have rolled free.
As if?
But these things did not occur. Simply, the violent motion accelerated the sinking.
Commodore Eric F.F. Forer stands, legs rooted substantially far apart, knees bending rhythmically to absorb the shocks of the listing and pitching, there in the wheelhouse at the wheel, until, at a dramatic moment, toward late evening, the bowsprit noses under, and the wind expires. As if there had never been wind.
The forward decking is awash with asphalt.
You see? It didn't work.
On the contrary, woman! On the contrary!
Stern and aft decking vanish. The Commodore springs to the roof of the cabin. The sails hang limp from their rigging.
This is the best ship I've ever made. See how she sinks evenly, instead of going astern or bow first. You can tell the character of a boat by the way she dies.
I see.
Plenty of time for all hands to abandon.
Plenty.
Better stand back and clear. Sometimes the last suction can be fierce.
Very well. Have all abandoned?
Yes. I gave the order some time ago.
I didn't hear it.
Doubtless it was the big wind and the sound of the sinking.
Yes, I suppose.
The surface of the driveway is now level with the roof of the wheelhouse. Darkness closing like the shutter of a camera.
Get a lantern!
What are you doing?
Climbing to the crossbar. Is there any rum?
I'm sorry. No.
He sits, legs dangling on either side of the mast, holding the tip of the mast near the flag with one hand.
The light of the lantern illuminates one side of his profile so brightly
that his features seem almost washed out. Up the mast creeps the asphalt, like mercury in a barometer.
And the surface meets the corrugated soles of his deck shoes. He stands upon the crossbar, draws himself up to his full height.
Eric! F! 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 Commodore!
He holds the lantern closer as the surface gathers his broad shoulders into itself.
Blow that damn thing out.
And there is not a trace, not a ripple, not even a small indentation in the dark surface of the driveway.
As she switches out the lights from room to room and begins to prepare for bed, the house rolls a little, like a large boat at a calm mooring. But she scarcely notices the motion. Miniature tremors are so very common in this precinct of the world.
You have heard a play for radio by J. Michael Yates, The Sinking of the Northwest Passage. Joseph Golland played the part of the Commodore, and Doris Chilcott played the part of his wife. The voices of the chorus were Wendy Falconer and David Stein. This week, CBC Playhouse was produced in the Vancouver studios of the CBC with sound by Lars Eastholm and technical operations by Josie Da Silva. Direction, Don Mowat.